Welcome to Educate to Self-Regulate, a podcast for educational leaders, teachers, and students, where in less than 20 minutes, we unpack educational research to support you and your students to become better learners. Hello, Rory. So good to see your healthy face, mate. I hear it's been a rough week for you this week.
I'm back. COVID finally got me. After 2 years of dodging it, my time had finally come.
You're still smiling. It's a good thing to see.
A couple of days of sickness and unfortunately a week off school, leaving my team in the trenches to cover for me. Just got back this week. So slowly but surely getting back to full health. How about you? How are you going?
Yeah, I'm all right. You know, my conversations with schools right now, that's definitely a reality for so many schools, staff being absent, students being absent. So it's tough times for educators right now on multiple levels. So kudos to you for just bouncing back as quickly as you have.
Hanging in there.
Cool, but let's get into it, Rory, because we've got lots to talk about today. And, you know, for our big question for this season is how do we motivate students? And today we're going to unpack self-efficacy. Now, Rory, what is self-efficacy?
Self-efficacy is one of the things that I actually feel like as a primary school teacher, I need to pay most attention to in terms of student motivation. So put as simply as, you know, I understand it, I think self-efficacy relates to beliefs that people have about whether or not they can be successful at a given task. So if you have high self-efficacy, it means that you do believe that you can do well in the task or be successful. If you have low self-efficacy, you don't believe that you're going to be able to achieve the goals that have been set or that you're going to be able to be successful in the learning experience that maybe a teacher has presented for. I think something's really important to remember about self-efficacy is that it's domain specific. And like what that means is that, you know, as a learner, you could have really high self-efficacy in mathematics, and that could be something that you really enjoy and you're really good at and you feel really confident. And then you might find you might have really low self-efficacy for reading, for example. Like it's something that you've always found difficult. Maybe you've made a lot of mistakes and your confidence is quite low in that regard. So it's good
to clarify that. Yeah. Because I noticed that in teacher education,
yep,
a lot of my pre-service teachers confuse kind of this specificity, that specific kind of domain nature of it,
yep,
with kind of general confidence.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I suppose the reason why self-efficacy is important for us and like understanding like our big question, like how do we motivate our students, is that these self-efficacy beliefs actually then the research shows that they impact on learning behaviors in learning experiences. So if you have low self-efficacy, the research shows that you maybe persevere less, you don't exert as much effort, your engagement can be low, you can actually even avoid tasks rather than trying to engage in them. And you may even try to vary the learning strategies that you're using less. So they're behaviors that we would perceive as motivated behaviors, trying hard, persevering, using multiple strategies. So if you've got low self-efficacy, the likelihood is that you're not going to be displaying those kind of behaviors as much as someone who had high self-efficacy.
Awesome. I agree with that completely. And I think that's perhaps a really nice segue to what I was just about to mention in terms of identifying self-efficacy, because you've kind of mentioned behaviors that we might overtly see in the classroom in relation to the high and low levels, which is really nice. And Rory, I did some digging up around the self-efficacy papers, journal articles, etc. I found two systematic reviews in this space. So there's one, I'll pop these in the podcast episode notes. This is something I'm learning, Rory.
For anybody who wants to get into the nitty gritty.
If you're interested in the deep dive, there was a paper, a systematic review that was done in 2016, and then there was another one done in 2021. Self-efficacy is quite a well-researched field, but there's still plenty of gaps in the field itself. And some of the things I did pick out of those papers was that students who are demonstrating negativity, fear, frustration, any one of those indicators could suggest low self-efficacy.
Yep.
Even a stressed out student's high anxiety, procrastination, obviously you've mentioned lack of persistence, obvious statements like, I don't think I can do this.
Yep.
Any one of those could be indicators of a concern from a teaching perspective.
Yep.
That is an entry point for us to sort of say, okay, this could be a self-efficacy issue that we need to intervene with.
It's probably important to highlight as well that in terms of self-regulated learning, that this process that we're really interested in, is that self-efficacy, these beliefs about learning, they're probably most relevant in that phase before a learning experience, or before someone engages in an actual learning experience, before they start the task that you've maybe introduced. That's where they're making decisions about whether or not they're going to be able to be successful. And so that's really, I think, where we as educators want to understand where our student self-efficacy is at.
So the core question then is, so Rory, how do we assess if that's such an important entry point for us in terms of understanding where our students are at in terms of their own self-efficacy?
Yep.
How do teachers assess self-efficacy in the classroom? Like, what do you use?
It's really difficult. This is why I feel like teachers have some of the hardest jobs in the world, is that you could have 24, 25, maybe even up to 30 students in your class, and every single one of them is going to have different beliefs about a maths task or a reading task or a writing task or whatever subject it is that you teach. That makes it really, really difficult. Like, I'm obviously a primary school teacher. One of the things that, primary school teachers use all the time, I don't know if they're used as much in secondary, is things like, like a traffic light system where you've got your green, your amber, and your red. They can actually be used, I think, to gauge student self-efficacy. So if I introduced a task and I'm just about to send everybody off to begin their learning, I might ask them to use their traffic light system to show me how confident they feel about achieving or being successful in the task. So are their belief that they can be successful? So green is they're really confident, they feel like they can do it. Amber is they're not too sure, but they want to give it a go. And red is that they're feeling really unconfident, or they don't believe that they're going to be able to get started or do well. And then they can pop those on their table. And it's really easy for me to see who maybe is carrying some low self-efficacy beliefs into their learning experience. And then I can do something like maybe pull those students together, do a bit more instruction, try and work out exactly what are the difficult things. That's one way to do it anyway. Other people use a rating system, like five fingers, you're really confident, and one finger, you're feeling really unconfident. But the more information I think that we can gather from students, that allows us to be really impactful in terms of how we can best spend our time in the classroom.
I love the strategies that you've suggested there in terms of the traffic light system. And I see things like that in teacher education as well, the classic kind of close your eyes, thumbometer type scenario. Yep. where students can do that. But I think one step perhaps that might progress that kind of assessment of self-efficacy a little bit further is to actually think about how we build in reflective prompts before a task. To get students to actually reflect on their own self-efficacy for the task, and to even go a little bit deeper and to think about why their self-efficacy might be low for that task and what they can do to shift it in that moment.
This is one of the interesting things that I've actually been thinking about, because whenever I was talking about self-efficacy and understanding a learner's self-efficacy, that's for my benefit to help teach them. But what you're talking about, and I think what we're ultimately trying to achieve, is for learners to be aware of their own self-efficacy. Would you say that that's like the ultimate goal if we're thinking about self-efficacy as something that impacts motivation?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think the strategies like the traffic light or even the thumbometer, that's a great diagnostic assessment for the teacher to understand where students are sitting with their self-efficacy to be able to intervene then at that level. But if we want to shift that responsibility to the student has to be able to conduct their own diagnostic assessment of their own self-efficacy.
And that's like true independent learning, because it's about you getting yourself through something that maybe you don't think that you can. If you're aware of your low self-efficacy and then making decisions to maybe try to change that. And that's like the perfect segue. So how can we boost self-efficacy, or how can our students boost their own self-efficacy? Are there strategies for that?
Yeah, there's four commonly documented strategies to enhance self-efficacy that you see in science of learning textbooks. I'll list them here really quickly, but the first one being mastery experiences. So if they want to improve their self-efficacy, one way to do that is to try and kind of chunk a task down so that you have small elements or aspects of success. And the idea there is that success builds on success. And so, you know, really creating experiences where you can have that success. I would say the other side to that particular strategy is to reflect back on when you have had success in similar tasks or previous experiences. That's always good. There's the second one, which is considered a physiological arousal or a state of arousal, where often when we're experiencing low self-efficacy, there's a shift in our physiological state.
The fear.
Yeah. There's a change in our biology to some degree, and we can, by shifting that physiological state, we can potentially shift our self-efficacy. That's the argument for that one. And so,
what you're telling me is I need to do some deep breathing whenever I'm just about to start my writing for my master's and I'm feeling like I really don't want to do it.
Yeah, you know, deep breathing, absolutely. Like, you know, a mindfulness exercise, laughter therapy, or sort of fake laughing, or getting up and doing a few star jumps could change that. There's multiple ways that you can change your physiological state.
But you're changing the physiological state to change potentially your beliefs about your ability to do the task.
Absolutely. Vicarious experiences is number three. And I know I'm using kind of
the technical language,
kind of psych jargon, so apologies.
So what is a vicarious experience?
So that is observing someone else have success in the task that you're about to do. So, you know, I often talk to my students about the fact that I have a low self-efficacy for cooking.
Right.
So if I wanted to boost my self-efficacy, I might find someone who has, let's say I'm trying to bake a quiche.
Yeah.
I might say, hey, Rory, I know you've had success with baking a quiche in the past.
Yep.
Do you mind showing me how to bake a quiche? And I could see you do that and I can learn from that. The alternative is to find someone who's a similar level to me.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, perhaps also, you know, not the best cook.
So not an expert.
Yeah. And to see them have success in it. So there's two kind of ways I think you can view vicarious experiences.
I think that's like really useful. And I'm always obviously thinking about the primary context is getting other students, not necessarily the best student in the class, but just someone who is maybe good at a particular thing to show others who are maybe like struggling how to do it.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that gives that the modeling, that's that vicarious experience you're talking about, where someone can look at another and go, oh, that's the way that they're doing it. They can do it. Therefore, if I follow the steps that they're following, I should be able to do it too. And that might be enough to just build that belief, get them started.
Particularly if they perceive that other individual's kind of ability or competence to be at a similar level, that's definitely going to boost their self-efficacy in being like, okay, yeah, hey, if they can do it, I could probably do it, that sort of statement.
And the last one,
which is social persuasion, but it's essentially verbal encouragement.
Yep.
And as teachers, we do that all the time, right? We offer praise and support and encouragement for our students. That support actually can boost self-efficacy. So we can't underestimate that. What you want to do if you want to shift it to the learner is that's when self-talk becomes so critical, because that's when me as a learner, if I've recognized I've got low self-efficacy about baking quiches, I'm going to start saying to myself, gosh, you can do this. You can do this. You know, you've had success with cooking in the past. So that's where I'm trying to reflect on previous experiences.
Yep.
I'm going to say, no, you know, you've tried new things before and you've had success with trying new things. And you did bake that apple tart the other day and that wasn't so bad, you know? And so that's where I'm going to start trying to encourage myself and persuade myself to give it a crack.
And then you can get like, I think it's really beneficial to, like, I talk to my students sometimes about like instructional self-talk, where you're actually giving yourself like a first step, or, you know, you're telling yourself that, oh, let's just get started, because once we get started, it's easier to keep going. And it's not necessarily just motivational. It's like, okay, this is the action that we're going to take. I think sometimes that can help as well.
Yeah, very important. And I know you mentioned in a previous conversation, Rory, about the way we perceive success and failure post-task, or that the way we interpret that success or failure,
it's the most
directly influence our self-efficacy as well.
So rather than just being happy that you were successful, it's about thinking really carefully about what was the thing that helped me to be successful, because that's the action that you want to take again to, you know, to help you in future endeavors. And I think that's really important for students to understand, so that they're not attributing their success to luck or the help of someone else who may not be there the next time. But that might be getting into attribution theory a bit too much. And I think we'll maybe talk about that in a few episodes time.
Yeah, we'll save that one for later down the track. But this is a nice point in our podcast episode today, which it comes time for our favorite segment.
It's on the reg.
On the reg, which means really we get to kind of connect the science of lingo we're talking about with our everyday lives. So Rory, where are you at, man? How's your self-efficacy?
Right. I'm going to have to be completely honest here. Like, as you know, we were talking over Christmas. So I was talking about taking up jiu-jitsu. I like to do a new sport every year. Yeah. And what I have found, if I'm being honest and I'm paying close attention, that my self-efficacy for jiu-jitsu can be, or is most of the time, quite low. Obviously, I'm a beginner. I have quite low belief in order that, like, that I can be successful in executing, like, the series of steps or the series of movements in order to do whatever the instructor is telling us to do in the classroom. And whenever I'm outside jiu-jitsu or whenever I'm preparing to go, sometimes that low self-efficacy, like, it allows a bit of, you know, negativity to creep into my mind. And I start sort of thinking, oh, maybe I could just go for a run instead, you know. And that's that task avoidance in relation to my low self-efficacy. So what I then find myself doing is I'm taking control, and if I'm being self-regulated, what I'm trying to do is talk to myself about, just like you said, the fact that I've learned lots of other sports before. I consider myself a pretty active and sporty person. I also consider myself to be a very good learner. And I think that ultimately everything can be boiled down to a learning problem. And so to be better, I'm going to have to do lots of repetition. I'm going to have to listen really carefully. I'm going to have to do extra practice potentially after the class. So I start to talk myself around, even though my self-efficacy for it can be quite low, and that sometimes makes me not want to go.
And you're just
confession. I feel like this is a confession booth.
But you still go, right, Rory?
I still go. Yeah, because I have the knowledge. I feel like it truly is because I have this kind of knowledge, I can almost override my system.
Yeah. And that's what about the power of self-regulation.
That is the power of self-regulation. What about you?
Yeah, so it's, I do jiu-jitsu, so I don't have a similar story, but I just yesterday had to do a moderation exercise for, I don't know why this is, I've been teaching for, you know, over 15 years now, worked in education for over 15 years, and I don't know why, when it comes to marking, I always have a moment at the start of marking a task where there's just a, like, oh, am I going to be able to provide valuable feedback? There's always a moment of self-doubt. Yeah. That the feedback that I'm going to provide is not going to be beneficial to the learner.
Yeah.
And I think that's perhaps in that moment, low self-efficacy. Now, I don't think I have, in general, low self-efficacy for marking, but there is always that moment right at the start. Yep. Where I experience that low self-efficacy for
and
the
that,
task.
You know, like, I think that what you're saying is that just comes because that comes from your desire to want to have maximum impact for the people that are learning from you. Like, you really just want to do well, which, like, I feel all teachers feel for their students. I know I certainly feel it.
And yeah, and similar to you, you got to override the system, right? So I recognize in that moment that that's what's happening. And there's a kind of internal conversation, the self-talk that happens, perhaps less explicit for me these days, because I feel like I've, you know, particularly with the marking, I've almost automatized it, where it happens at a subconscious level. Now, this might sound counterintuitive to self-regulation, but I've automatized the override so well that I just do it even though the doubt's there.
I love that. You've automatized the override. You need to coin that phrase.
And so I just go for it.
So it's like part of you now.
It's there, but it doesn't even, like, it's like I registered that it's there, but it's like a brief registration. And then it's just a reflex almost in the way that I then act.
It's like your strategy for getting out of bed that you talked about in the previous episode. It's exactly the same thing. I aspire to be like that. I may have had a sleep in this morning when I shouldn't have as well. So,
but this is just about habit formation. This is about scaffolding to a point where you achieve a level of ability of automation, essentially. Yeah. Self-efficacy for marking. I still moderated the task. I still submitted it for feedback. And, you know, in hindsight, perhaps it was not my best effort or could have been moderated a little bit differently. But, you know, that's, I just accept that as part of the learning process. Me a better marker today.
Perfect. So, conscious of time. If you are a new listener to the podcast, make sure you share it with friends, save it, or subscribe. If you have any questions, and we really want to hear from our listeners, if you have any questions or comments, send us a DM through either of our social media channels, which is Twitter and Instagram at edtoselfreg. So E-D-T-O selfreg. And I think that's us for the episode, Shai. And as always, to you and everyone else out there, keep regulating.